Welcome. You're listening to a special episode released from one of the podcasters and storytellers who are part of Storytelling Podcast Week. Join us July 21st through July 25th for live story salons, live podcast episodes, live interviews, panels, and more from podcasters from both audio fiction and narrative nonfiction shows throughout our imaginations and around the world, including Grammar Girl, the team from the Council on Foreign Relations behind Why It Matters, the team from Night Vale Presents and Within the Wires, Creepy, and more. Storytelling Podcast Week is brought to you by Podbean. We're bringing you conversations, interactions, and programming live, connecting podcasters and shows directly to you in the audience through Podbean Live, where podcasts come to life. To get the full schedule to join the live streams in real time through the Podbean app, register now at podcastweek.live/storytelling. That's podcastweek.live/storytelling. And now, please enjoy this special episode from our guest as part of Storytelling Podcast Week's recorded episode showcase.
Hello, my name is Nicholas McInerney. I'm a playwright and lecturer. 10 years ago, I came out. I had been married for nearly 20 years and had 2 daughters. It was both terrifying and exhilarating. I was about to set out on a journey from one world to another, where I was to reinvent myself, or maybe to find out finally who I really was. I decided for the first time in my life to keep a diary. I wrote furiously, without censoring myself, straight from the heart. 10 years on, I want to invite you to come on that journey with me again. Each of these podcasts will include diary entries and a discussion all about our shared experiences coming out as gay and bisexual men, dads, husbands and partners. By sharing our lives, we hope to include yours. The 9th of November 2006. Yesterday, I took my first step into a world that I, for a long time, have contemplated but never quite had the courage to explore. Having joined an American group called HOW, Husbands Out to Wives, and become part of the UK contingent, which currently number 4, I agreed to meet up at a gay pub in Soho called the King's Arms. So at about 7:30, I finished struggling with my iPod, another story, took a deep breath and pushed into a very old-fashioned pub, already packed to the rafters with a crowd of burly, hairy, bearish-looking guys, drinking beer and pulling on cigarettes and doing that thing people do with their phones, which has become a kind of displacement activity, i.e. frantically texting to give the impression they are engaged in very important activity. Apart from a gently camp atmosphere and the presence of free gay listings magazines strewn across tables, oh, and the almost complete absence of women, you'd never have guessed it was a gay pub. Later, around 10:30, I wandered around Paddington Station in floods of tears, uncontrollable. Hello, welcome back to Rainbow Dads. And I'm here with Deep, Arnett and David, and we're talking about our collective and individual experiences of being married, coming out, and being gay or bisexual dads. And this podcast, I wanted to talk a little bit about the psychological states that we were in when we came out and how we moved forward from that. We talked a little bit last time about going out and exploring the sweetie shop until our teeth rotted, and that aspect of it. But obviously, there's also, or at least in my personal experience, a deep hunger to have a really deep, proper, loving relationship with another man. But at the same time, I was wondering, having come out and also then caught up in all of that psychodrama of the family separating and how distressing that was to everybody and how guilty I felt about it, whether I was in the right state to be able to even consider that. And I wondered how that aspect, what your experience was of that aspect. I'm going to start with you, David.
So talking about relationships with men, I've never had a relationship with a man, so that's always eluded me. But I'm quite optimistic. I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I think we were talking earlier about love, you know, being in a loving relationship. Some people don't experience that at all in their lives. I have experienced that with my wife. So for me, I have been in love and to some extent still am in love with my ex-wife.
That's interesting.
Well, we have a loving relationship. So, you know, we are still close. We spent, you know, 12 years in a happy marriage. So you don't just switch the light off, as it were. But with regards to a loving relationship with a man, I'd love to. But whether that happens to me or not, I don't know. I think I probably could have had a relationship with a guy when I was in my 20s, but for whatever reason it didn't happen. If it had have happened, my life maybe would have been completely different. So I don't regret anything. I've got two fantastic kids and, you know, I had a loving relationship, as I say, with a woman. So I have had love in my life. It would be nice to have love with a man to experience that, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
Okay, let me explore some of that a wee bit more, because that's really interesting. When you came out and moved from one space into the other space, as it were, moved from self-identifying as a gay man who was married into a more out gay man, did you feel that psychologically it created problems for you in that sense? Did you feel a kind of conflict that was preventing you from making that connection? I just want to press you a little bit more about how you felt in terms of your kind of psychological state. I mean, I went into quite a bit of counselling, and I suspect that's something that's common to quite a few people who've been through this experience. But I just wanted to know a little bit more about your
experience. Yeah, well, my counselling was that I met these guys through Gay Dad's website. I also wrote a book about being a gay dad with other, you know, 10 other guys. And their stories. So that was my counselling. I didn't feel the need to go to a counsellor, but had it not been for that, I think, you know, it would have been very hard for me.
Tell us a bit more about the book, because obviously that was a decision that you made. How did you come to even consider writing it?
Because at that point that we're talking about when you come out, and I was looking for other stories of gay men in my situation, I couldn't find any. There were quite a few American books about same-sex parenting or adoption or stories about sports stars coming out. But there was nothing that spoke to me as a gay dad, someone in my situation. And I quite literally felt, although logically I knew it couldn't be the case, but I felt that I was the only one that it had ever happened to. So I was desperately searching for other guys in that situation. So the internet provided that, got in contact with a group. But because I was looking for other stories and couldn't find them, and I thought, well, I'll write the book myself. So going through that whole process of, you know, getting the stories, going through them, rewriting them, editing them, whatever, and hearing other people's stories was my therapy. And I think had it not been for that, I would have been in a much darker place.
Were there particular things that you took from that experience of hearing other people's stories particular things that you took from writing the book that you could tell us about now in terms of that experience?
Well, the fact that the 10 guys who took part all came from different backgrounds, religious backgrounds, you know, sociological backgrounds, financial backgrounds, jobs, whatever. But the theme was always the same, that they'd married the person that they'd loved. And I took a great strength from that, because I think as a gay dad, you do feel like you've duped someone into a relationship, i.e. your wife, and that you've not been completely honest. But I took specifically from those stories that love wins through, and it just happens that the person that you fell in love with was a woman. Yeah. And as I said before, I'm still in love with that woman. She's the only woman that I've been in love with, and she's the only person that I've been in love with. And yeah, you know, I am a gay man and I'm happy where I am now. But if I don't find a partner, you know, for the rest of my life, then so be it. You know, as I said, a lot of people go through their whole lives with never finding someone.
Right.
So, yeah, I took the variety of stories and backgrounds that these guys come from. So it's not just a particular type of person or a particular background that you come from. It's right across the board. And that, you know, we do what we do for the right reasons.
Deep, did you feel you duped your wife when you got married to her? It's quite a powerful word, isn't it?
Yeah. And I say that, but I don't think at the time that I felt that I was.
For sure, but I absolutely connect with that, because that's probably the source of some of my guilt,
isn't it? Yeah.
Guilt,
yeah.
Around the breakup of the relationship.
Yeah.
In that you meet this person you care about deeply, and then somehow you've deceived them and betrayed them.
Yeah.
I mean, I could only have duped her in a sense that I would have duped myself as well, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know my sexuality at the time. It was something that I hadn't faced and come to terms with personally. So had I been aware, would I have done things differently? Perhaps. But actually, if I look back, would I do things differently? No, I wouldn't, because I loved her very much. I've got two children with her, who we both love very much. We share a lot in this world together. And we had some very good times as well. And, you know, when I got married, I never expected to not ever be married to anybody, you know, not to get divorced to this person. I expected to spend the rest of my life with her. So I don't think duping is the right word, definitely, because it definitely didn't cross my mind that this relationship would ever have come to an end.
And what about your psychological journey? Did you ever have to go for counselling? Did you ever... Yeah, I mean, yeah. How was it for you?
So I have had counselling.
Was it helpful, of course?
So it was helpful to the extent that the first person I ever came out to was a counsellor, and I felt a huge weight being lifted off my shoulders, and I wasn't even there to talk about my sexuality, but that obviously came out at the time. One of the things that really helped me during my journey was reading a book called The Velvet Rage.
Do you know, I was just going to mention, I was thinking that whilst David was talking.
Which was, an American psychologist who's been working with gay men, bisexual men for a number of years, who's written his memoirs around the journey that most men tend to go through that in his experience. And actually, quite a lot in his book resonated with me. The throwing myself in to prove myself to be really good at lots of other stuff, so that it deflects.
Overcompensating
on lots of other things, so that you don't have to be accepted. But then equally, that overcompensation isn't just about my sexuality; it's also about my religious and my racial identity, which was significantly different. So, I felt as though I had to be a role model for people of my faith. I had to be a role model of people of my race. I had to be the best that I could be at everything, because I wanted people to see me and the people that I resemble to be really good and really good at stuff. And you know, hence why I've got my values really are very, very strong. So when we talked earlier about the need to go out and find sex and all these things, that for me is not important, because my values are very different. They're very, you know, they're held together in a very different light, because I want to be the best that I can be. And if you look at an Indian person, that would be considered as being disrespectful to us. So we just look at it in a different way, I guess. So. Yeah.
Okay. And just tell us a little bit more about the counselling, because I do think it's helpful to talk about that. Explain why you went to the counselling and how that might have helped you in terms of
as you say, finally being able to come out?
So I went for counselling initially because I was suffering from work-related stress. I had a particularly busy, stressful job. But on top of that, it was a time when the relationship with my wife wasn't great. So that was putting an immense amount of pressure on me. So essentially, it was around sort of how to manage my work-related stress and how to manage my marriage, which wasn't working very well at the time, and the realisation that probably it had come to an end, but I didn't know how to end it. So, I mean, that served the purpose up to that point, and I never had to see the counsellor again once I said those words of, you know, I'm gay.
And was that,
she said it's okay.
Is that, was that as a response to a question that the counsellor asked?
You know what, I can't remember the circumstances at all. Okay. I just remember the I remember very little about the counselling other than that moment when I came out and said the words, I am gay, and it's the first time I've ever, ever said those words to myself, either consciously or subconsciously. And for me, that was quite a powerful moment. From that time on, I've got a really good network of family and friends. So I talked to my family and friends because up until this point, I couldn't tell anybody, but then I didn't know what I was telling anybody, essentially. And I think having said uttered these words and said these words and admitted for the first time, wow, I said it and nothing happened.
You know,
I wasn't struck down. For me, that was quite a powerful moment. So I then started talking to my friends and family and coming out to people and being able to talk. And that, for me, was really, really powerful. The next time I had to see a counsellor was at the end of one of my very early gay relationships, which came to an end and came crashing down.
Tell us a bit about that. Tell us a bit about how you went into that relationship. How long had you been separated from your wife, etc., etc., etc.? How that aspect of the journey?
So my wife and I had been separated for a number of years before we actually ended the relationship, in a sense. Right. We had separate rooms and we did things separately with the kids. We both worked full time, so we spent very little time together. So it was quite a number of years later, but certainly after I told her it was over, I'd probably met this person about a year later.
Right.
And we had quite an intense relationship and were together for about a year. And it then all came to an end. And it came to an end because even though I've always been open about the fact that I'm a parent and I'm a dad and I've got children, he said, as a gay man, he'd never expected to be in a position where he would have children. And I said, but you haven't got children. I've got children. And he said, yeah, but it would change my life significantly. And I don't think I'm prepared to do that. So for me, that was quite heartbreaking because, you know, I've always been open about the fact that I have children, and for to be with somebody who was, that's fine. But he'd never actually met my children because I wouldn't introduce somebody to my children very early on. I need to know that I know somebody intimately and that there's a need to introduce them to my kids. And I suppose that's probably quite telling because after a year,
To me, the fact that you hadn't introduced him to those children after a year is telling us something about.
It was more about, he didn't want the introduction.
He didn't want to meet them.
Yes. So, so I suppose that should have been the red flag to me earlier. Yes,
absolutely.
I guess.
Absolutely.
But we always learn after.
We're so wise, aren't we, after the event? 2020 vision is fantastic in retrospect.
Needless to say, I've got better, and the current partner I have is wonderful and is great with my kids and. Had a really good relationship.
So you had that first relationship with this guy, lasted a year. You came out of it. It sounds like it had a crisis, and that you came out of it quite distressed.
Very
distressed.
Yeah.
Okay. And because you know, I'm thinking. I will talk a little bit about my experience, but yes, and I certainly relate to that. And moving forwards on from there, what happened then? Did you go back on the dating game? Did you say, I'm not going to go near a man ever again? Or
So the latter.
The latter.
Quite disgruntled.
Sorry, that was a bit...
I needed to do a lot more work on me and focus on me because I think I'd focused on my coming out and my gay / bi identity. I hadn't actually thought about me.
This is really important, isn't it? Because as I said, we load everything onto the question of sexuality, but of course, our sexuality is just part of that bigger picture, which is ourselves.
Yeah. So I then came across a life coach who is absolutely terrific in London. And he coached me through some of the issues that I had that were actually my issues that I hadn't dealt with, because sexuality is only one part of us. Mm. There's a lot more complexities to a person. And I think that's what I overlooked, because I thought, oh, coming out gay means it resolves all the issues, but it didn't, because I've now reconciled with the fact that I identify as bisexual. Mm. I've managed to love myself, look after myself, focus on myself. And it's funny because, you know, when you say, I don't want a relationship ever again, it's always it's at those moments where you go, I'm never going to touch a man ever again. And then you fall over one. And then you go, oh, that wasn't supposed to happen. So I found a very loving man, had a very good relationship. And
are you guys still together?
Yes.
Wow. How long have you been together?
So we've known each other for 4 years. We have a slight hiccup. We don't live in the same country, but we will overcome that issue in the future, because obviously I have children that I have to bring up at the moment.
So this is a long distance relationship. Now, this is very interesting. Tell us a bit about that, because that presents kind of a very particular challenges, I think.
Yeah, so you could call it challenges, but you could also call it exciting, because we get to have lots of holidays visiting one
Fabulous.
Another. So it's across the pond, back and forth from the US. It has its challenges, but at the moment it's a case of, we know we can't live together because he doesn't want to move to the UK. He's been over many times and can't reconcile with moving over here. But I'd love to move to the US, but I can't because I have my children to bring up at the moment. Yes. And I'm their parent, so I need to be here. So my kids want to move to the US. So once they finish there, they would be happy to go now. I won't let them go now. Once they finish their education, they may well move over. So we'll see how it goes in the future.
Wow. So you could be making a big move.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah.
Fantastic. That's really great. Good to hear. It's lovely to hear. Arnett.
Mm. I'm full of thoughts now. It's so fascinating listening to these stories. Yeah. It fills my head. And I'm trying to remember what the original question was.
I suppose what I was interested in was exploring the kind of the fallout from coming out. And, you know, there's sex, and we can all fill our cup until it runneth over with all those exciting things. But actually what we're looking for, of course, is that relationship. And I wondered psychologically, how that journey continued, and what were the challenges, and also and how that worked out for you.
What's really resonating for me, just sitting listening to Deep and David, is that memory of the family that I was a part of, that I'd had this relationship for a very long time with this woman. And, you know, there was definitely love in that relationship, and that sense of being contained in a family. And then what happened after that? I moved out very quickly afterwards, and I made a decision to buy a property. And because finances were very, very tight and difficult, I bought an old property that needed lots of renovation. And I can remember sitting in this house in winter that had no central heating, and the windows were falling out, and there was ice in the sink in the kitchen because it was so cold, and thinking, what on earth am I doing? On my 50th birthday, Christmas Eve, sitting alone in this house. Mm. Because one of the things about being a parent is that so many of your friends are friends that are connected through your children. You build your social network very much around the children. You know, your children are young, you meet other families with young children, and they grow up together, and you grow up together as families. And I guess it's not unique to being a gay dad, but just in terms of separating. When you separate and you step out of that, and you're not the person with the children, it's how do you then relate back to those families and the couples with the children and the gatherings that would happen around those families, and suddenly you're not a part of that. Mm-hmm. And so as well as stepping out of my family, it felt that I'd stepped out of my social life as well, mm-hmm. of the social networks that I had. And it wasn't that people were rejecting me. It was more that I didn't know how to deal with that. I didn't know how to approach these people. I didn't know what their reaction would be.
It's a comment on how our social roles prescribe our feelings of validation, that if you're a husband and a father, you go to a social event at school, that's who you are.
Yeah.
You're Tom and Jenny's dad.
That's right. But but layered over that was the fact that the reason I had stepped out was because I was gay. And I wasn't going around with a big banner around my neck saying, hey, I'm a gay man. I still was very careful about who I said that to. I was very careful not to expose my children to pressures of, you know, people at school knowing, hey, your dad's gay, and their friends. And so I was very worried. Yeah, about who I spoke that to. And so all of these things put barriers between me and, you know, that social network that I knew. So I did go into a really, really dark place, which was, it was two real contradictory places. On one side, I absolutely maintained a sense of glee and pride in the fact that I'd had the courage to step out and stand in my identity as a gay man. But on the other side, there was an intense loneliness that I had. And to some extent, there was at times almost even a hatred of the fact that I was gay. And it was sometimes I would think, why the hell am I gay? If I wasn't gay, none of this would be happening right now. So if I wasn't gay, then actually I could have just stayed with my family and everything would have been fine. I wouldn't have financial problems. I would have this, you know, my family unit around me. My children would be with me. I'd be reading stories to my kids at night. And yet here am I sitting in this bloody freezing house all alone. And so there were times where it was a really dark point where I was very actively contemplating suicide.
Right. Were you seeking any help?
Well, that was the point. That was the point that I went to the doctor and, you know, got some counselling through that.
But isn't it ironic, thinking of suicide, which in my view, with the, you know, I have personal experience of this, would be the worst thing you could ever have done for your children.
Yeah.
I mean, just the worst. It's the gift that keeps on giving. You never quite get over that, like that.
Yeah.
So that's... But you certainly were making things hard for yourself on it. You bought a house that was required huge amounts of work. Maybe the house was a kind of metaphor for yourself, you know, these rattly windows and this kind of ice in the sink. You know, maybe that was a kind of your personality, kind of writ large, you know, and it needed all that work and nurturing and love and cherishing and kindness, because I think that's something that we do take away from. I'll come to my experience in a bit, but when you talk about how you felt, I can feel that you took kindness away from yourself and that blame and that guilt, and that was something I certainly felt very strongly.
And it's interesting because I listened to what Deep said just now, and when he said the thing that he hadn't done was to actually look after himself and to think about himself and what he needed in the whole. And I think what I was doing in buying that house, my preoccupation at that time was, I need a place that my children can come and visit me. I need a place that's big enough for my children to have their own rooms in this house. And I just really was not thinking carefully, and I wasn't thinking about what do I need in this time. And the reality that actually I needed to put myself, in hindsight, into a place where actually I could nurture myself and take time for myself and work through what this meant for me and what this meant in terms of my relationships with my children and my partner that I'd left. And I didn't do that because I was thinking about everybody else.
Well, again, don't you think that part of you, one thinks, I've come out, I've done this huge thing, I've taken this a time for myself to make this huge statement about myself. I must now get on with trying to make everybody else come to terms with that. I'm now responsible for all of those people's journeys in coming to terms with the decision and the announcement I've made. Yeah. When, of course, and that's a very parenting attitude to have. So that's very, I think everybody's nodding heads here. Mm. I think we're all relating to that.
Yeah. Somehow you have to make it better.
Yes.
Yeah, for everybody else.
Well, because you fucked up, you know, in a sense.
And it might be just carry on as normal.
Yes.
And let's not talk about it.
Yes.
Because
don't mention the war.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. For a few months, I stayed with a colleague of mine who, you know, really kind man who was divorced, and he had 4 children and he had a house, and he let me have a room for a few months to stay in. And I know that my children, you know, they were welcome to come and be there with me, but I know that they felt that it wasn't my space that they were coming into. And that was a real driver for me about, I need to have my own place where the children can come and it can become their second home. Mm. And so that became a real important bit for thinking.
Given the turmoil that you were going through, how present were you for your children during this time?
Well, in hindsight, not.
Yeah.
No. That's the ironic thing, is that I was doing these things for my children, but my head was, I don't know where, really. And it took a few years for things to really settle down.
And so what made you seek out help? What made you not do this mad, terrible thing and kill yourself?
It was the moment of driving home from work one dark winter's evening and actually thinking about, okay, how much rope do I need? There were some beams in the attic in the house that I was in.
You were starting to work out the logistics.
And I'd actually started to work out the logistics of how much rope do I need, because actually these beams were high enough I could, you know, put some rope around it and actually I could, you know, finish it quite easily up there. And actually it was that vision of my children and how they would receive that and how... Actually, I couldn't do that to them. That was the point, made me make the phone call.
And who did you phone, Arnett?
I phoned the doctor, made an appointment with the doctor, and the doctor was really great. And in the telephone call initially with the doctor, I said, look, I need to talk to you. I'm concerned about counselling. And they said, I said a little bit about my situation. So they booked me a double session at the end of their surgery, so that there wasn't a pressure of time, and I went and I just spoke through the whole thing, and that's when they put me through and referred me through to counselling, and that was really helpful because it was CBT,
cognitive behavioural therapy.
Which wasn't into exploring all the background, exploring all of the baggage, but actually just helping me to focus on what do I need to do proactively to get me to next week. How do I just move myself forward step by step? And so I did that for 10 weeks, and then a little bit later I went back and had some more counselling, which focused on the relationships in my life and exploring, you know, which relationships were really important and what I was giving out in terms of those relationships. And that was really interesting.
So talking cure, did you have any medication prescribed?
I didn't, no.
It
was offered to me, but I made a clear choice not to.
I really fought having antidepressants prescribed and then not actually immediately after I came out, but actually several years ago when I felt things were particularly bad, I did take citalopram for about 18 months. And I'm not sure what effect it had or whether it was a placebo effect, but certainly things did slightly improve. And I, you know, that it's important to know that that's also available for people. I really connect with this notion of, you know, the bad father who had done this terrible thing to his family. My children were so desperately upset, as I said before in the previous podcast. It got to the point where they refused to talk to me, and they wrote me this letter 9 days after I buried my father. I think that was probably the lowest point, and we had some counselling together. I mean, I felt overwhelming sense of guilt breaking up a family. Did anyone else just connect with that awful sense of...
You know, guilt is huge.
The guilt is crushing at times. And I tell you, the thing that really slayed me, and still does, is when someone says something kind to you, I would just go. You know, somebody would ring you up and say something nice, or just a small kindness. And that really, really... it just completely pulled the rug from underneath me. It's that wonderful line in Clockwise of John Cleese. He says, "The despair I can put up with, it's the hope I can't stand." And there was a time when you were just so caught up in that terribly negative view of how you were, that if anyone did anything kind for you,
people used to say to me, "You're so brave to do this." And it was the last thing on earth that I felt.
Yeah, let's talk about bravery, because people say that to me, and I think a lot of people say that to you, and often it's a precursor to them starting to talk a little bit about what's going on in their lives, because one of the features of coming out is that suddenly you're a confidant for other people's relationship issues. But let's talk about bravery. Did you ever feel brave? Did you feel brave deep?
So at times I did, but at other times I didn't.
When would you feel brave?
So I felt brave certainly when I was decisive and I put my needs first, because I knew that however hard it was going to be on my family, I need to make sure that I'm in a good place to be able to look after them, and I wasn't in the right place to be looking after them in the relationship that I had at the time. With the person that I was living with, even though we were separated. We had little to do with each other. I felt as though I needed to be honest to my children about who I am as a person. I needed to be able to be authentic with them. And when I can be that, I feel brave, because I feel, you know, incredibly proud that I can be open with my children and they know who I am, rather than having to put on a mask and pretend to be somebody else. I don't want them to get to know somebody who's their father that is not the real person.
And yet, arguably, that's how most people do live their lives, I think. How about you, Arnett? Did you feel you were brave?
I would.
You know, listening to you now, I mean, I think you were incredibly brave.
I would absolutely echo what Deep was saying. For me, the decision to step out of my family and to step into my identity as a gay man, it did feel brave. It felt that I needed to make that step so that I could be true to who I am for my children, because I could feel growing inside of me in my relationship. And for the last 2 to 3 years of my relationship, you asked me about being present for my children afterwards, but actually I think for 2 to 3 years before my relationship finished, I wasn't present for the children either, because
I had this
growing sense of confusion inside of me.
So, this preoccupation, it's something that hangs around like a black cloud above your head.
Yeah. So stepping out was, in a sense, that first very brave move that I did. And then a number of times, at the beginning, the speaking it to other people, telling people at work, telling... the head teacher at my child's school about this, so that they would be able to deal with anything that might happen around my child. Those moments. The other really big brave moment for me was when I first brought my first big boyfriend. My first significant relationship I had was with a guy in London, and I was at the time doing some work in London, so my relationship existed in London. And then I made the decision to actually invite him back to my home in Plymouth and to spend time with me and my children, and that was huge for me to make that decision to do that.
Tell us how that felt when that day that
I was nervous, excited, proud. I was excited to introduce him to my children. I was really worried about how my children would deal with this. Mm-hmm. But it was just this sense that this could be the beginning of a new reality of me as a gay dad having a boyfriend and us being a family together. Sitting around the table with my children, with my boyfriend, having dinner together or watching TV or going to the cinema together or going for a walk. Just doing those normal things that I used to always do as a father in a family. And actually, here was a chance that I could do that again.
Suddenly there was a possibility. Yeah. It's like spring with flowers coming, flowers coming through.
And I mean, that first relationship, we lasted for nearly 3 years, but that did finish. I'm now in a relationship which is moving on for 4 years now. Fantastic. My partner lives with me. He describes my four children as his stepchildren, even though two of them are older than him. and it's wonderful. And there's a real genuine acceptance. Fantastic. Both ways.
David, bravery.
Yes, bravery, sir.
Wait, did you feel you were being brave?
No, and I think bravery is something that other people put on you.
Ascribe
they give
to
you.
You
a label, say that you're brave. I felt probably the opposite of brave. I felt cowardice. Really.
But that was all. Why did you feel cowardly?
Well, because I didn't do what I should have done probably years ago. And I think it's all tied up with guilt. So I didn't feel that what I did in coming out was particularly brave. It was something that I should have done. So therefore it wasn't brave. I actually feel more brave doing things like this, because this is far more nerve-wracking, and it's far more putting your soul out there and laying your cards out on the table for all to see and for people to judge you. So it's far more brave, I think, doing something like this.
And or writing a book.
And writing a book. But that was part of my process of therapy and coming out and coming to terms with who I am. And that's not... that's not something that has happened within a year or 2 years. I mean, it goes on. And the more that I find I'm in situations like this, talking about my experiences, and, talking with other guys who've had similar experiences, it all helps.
It gets easier.
And it gets easier. And you get to learn to love yourself and like yourself.
Yeah.
And that you are okay. And that your life is valid. And that you are, you have as much standing in the world as anybody else. But at that point, which we're talking about coming out and, did you feel brave? No, I didn't feel brave.
I think this that self-worthlessness is a very, very powerful thing that one can slip into easily. I want to finish on something that my ex-wife said that I thought was brilliant. We were going through turmoil, usual agonies. She would sometimes... Before we separated, I remember once she leant over to me and whispered in my ear, "The time to be happy is now." And of course, she's right. But what she did say, one of the things that I clung on to, is that with children, we have to model the behaviour as adults that we would hope that our children might be able to adopt if they're presented with similar kinds of situations. So respect, compassion, kindness, all of these things are really important. And it was something that I clung on to, even in the darkest moments, because I thought that whatever else happened between the two of us, we really tried to model that behaviour for our children. I want to thank David. Arnett and Deep for this fantastic podcast. Thank you very much, guys. The Rainbow Dads look forward to talking to you about another subject very soon. Thank you. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this podcast and wish to speak to someone, please ring Switchboard, the LGBT plus helpline, on 0300 330 0630. Calm words when you need them most.
Thank you for joining us for this special episode as part of Storytelling Podcast Week. Join us July 21st through July 25th for live story salons, live podcast episodes, live interviews, panels, and more. To get the full schedule and join the live streams in real time through the Podbean app, register now at podcastweek.live/storytelling. That's podcastweek.live/storytelling. Yeah.